I will work day in and day out, wake up and smell the coffee.
I want to return to the European Union.
Another future is possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Maria Fernandez-Garcia from the Right to Roam organization. Welcome to the podcast, Maria.
Thanks, Will. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's great to have you on. Now, the first question I'd like to ask is, do you think you could explain to the listeners what Right to Roam is?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a phrase that is used in many countries, and it describes the right of people to roam across the landscape. So regardless of ownership of who actually owns that particular piece of land, people have a right to access it. So they have a right to enjoy the hot time with their family. They have a right to learn about different aspects of nature. So exploring rivers, woodlands, marshlands, moors, mountains, all the M's. But yeah, they have a right essentially to that nature. In turn, there's a responsibility of that person to take care of that landscape. So with rights become responsibility, you know, this could be anything from treading carefully, especially between, say, early spring and late summer, being cautious of ground nesting birds, as well as things like walking on the paths to reduce footfall on some more delicate areas. Absolutely keeping dogs on leads in certain places too, if at all dogs are permitted in those areas. And so it's selective as well. It doesn't apply to areas that should be protected. So for example, some peat bogs, if those are endangered in that landscape, maybe other types of wetlands, places where there's either rich biodiversity that should be protected or or maybe more fragile ecosystems that again need protection so that they can regenerate. So yeah, it's essentially describing that right of regardless of ownership, where we have a right to be on that land. But yeah, as I say, this comes with responsibility of protecting that landscape as well.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Could you just explain how Right to Roam started? What caused the organisation to be set up in the first place?
Yeah, sure. So this organisation was started originally by two of our founders, Guy and Nick. So Guy Shrubsole, who was writing at the time about 2 years ago, two, 3 years ago, Who Owns England, which is a book about land ownership, and describing that, you know, around 50% of the land is owned by 1% of the population, and essentially exposing the disparity of that ownership, and how a lot of that has been through generations and generations of inheritance. And then Nick was exposing the law of trespass as not a criminal offence. So he was writing a book that worked very much in tandem with Guy's, The Book of Trespass, which was essentially his own journey crossing the lines that divide us, and seeing that crossing of the lines as an act of rebellion, seeing what lies behind those lines, but also exposing that it's not actually a criminal offence, despite the signs, the endless signs that tell us that we shouldn't be there. Especially in England, they're pretty aggressive signs that say, you'll be prosecuted, there's lots of red and yellow colours. Mm. So yeah, I guess it was exposing that fact that actually it's not a criminal offence. So yeah, they kind of connected over those two things.
And why do you think it's important that people have the ability to walk and roam freely in the countryside within, as you said, bearing in mind environmental reasons, not in certain peat bogs, etc.? Do you think it's important not just for physical well-being, but also for people's mental health, their mental well-being as well, to be able to have that kind of access to the countryside?
Absolutely. It's not even just a thought of mine. There's just countless evidence to show that exact case. And not only just our access to nature, but our relationship. So whether we feel a sense of connection to that landscape, is that there's so much more evidence coming out now to share that is actually the reason. why it benefits our mental health. So it's kind of a non-discussion point in a sense that it's so highly evidenced that that is the case. And now we're getting into the details of, yeah, essentially it is about that relationship. So the point that we are coming from with the Right to Roam campaign is that we can't create relationship with something that we do not have access to. And if we're not creating relationship, then we're going to get declining mental health, which is exactly what we've seen in this country. So we've got mental health issues on the rise, especially in young people, you know, more and more disconnected from the natural world. Mm. There's even some new evidence coming out to show that even in cases of ADHD, which is becoming more and more diagnosed, that it might not be attention deficit, but rather nature deficit, because those young people who are then put in a natural setting do not present with the same symptoms as they do in a box, in a classroom. So it's even just showing that it's about that quality of relationship with nature that can have such a huge benefit on, yeah, not only our physical health, so, you know, increasing our exercise and that sort of thing, but also incredibly powerful for our mental health with that connection.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And do you think as well that the awareness of people's mental health and the relationship it has to nature has become more apparent to a lot of people post COVID and post the lockdowns, where obviously people were much more restricted, had to spend a lot more time in their homes, particularly if they were living in cities where they didn't have access to the countryside? Do you think as we've come out on the other side of that, that people are more aware of the need of access to the countryside and also of the mental health benefits of having that access?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw it with like the take up of gardening, you know, people having the time to spend time outside, and people who had access to an outdoor space, even a very small balcony or patio, how their mental health was much better than, you know, outcomes for compared with other people who didn't have that access and were maybe only permitted to go out to the shops, who weren't in walkable distance from a green space. So yeah, it's definitely become clearer as we were all forced to be inside for that period of time. And then, yeah, as I say, like people just absolutely desperate to get out. And then I feel like it also made people realize how many places were actually accessible to them, because it's vastly different as we go through the country. There's like certain constituencies that have a lot of access, and then certain constituencies that have next to nothing in terms of access to green space or blue space. So I think it became really evident to people through lived experience rather than just through even like intellectual awareness, which I think really did embed it in people's understanding, because they actually were living it and they could see the benefit, either the benefits that it had or the deficit and the lack of it that they had. So yeah, definitely, I think it's since that, it was embodied in all of our experiences, it's become really clear.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Do you think you could explain a bit about how the law has changed on the Right to Roam and the context behind the Countryside and Rights of Way Act?
Yeah, sure. So the Countryside of and Rights of Way Act, or the CROW Act, so that was established in 2000, and the same for Scotland. But for some reason in England, it was favoured with a default of exclusion. So we were excluded from land regardless of ownership, or, you know, taking into account that if you didn't own the land, then you weren't able to access that land. So that resulted in about 8% of England, which is designated as access land. Whereas in Scotland, for example, just to compare, we've got a default of access, and then we've got exceptions to that. So it, even within that 8% that we do have in England, where 92% is off limits, private land, it's still really unequal. Mm. So, for example, we've got like the West Midlands has 0.3% of land area that's designated accessible. However, we've got like the North Yorks, and yeah, other places in North Yorkshire, which have more like 22%. So it really does vary depending on where you are. And so this kind of exacerbates this inequity between people's access, again, like what we would have seen during COVID. was that for some people it was actually not too bad because they could head outside and be in the middle of this beautiful landscape. So yeah, the Countryside Rights of Way Act, it does give us that 8%, but what the Right to Roam are calling for is this more Scottish style of access. Still within that, there'll be exceptions. As I mentioned before, there'll still be exceptions with protected areas. And we're really keen to work with nature organisations to make sure that we are really taking into account the protection that our wildlife needs, especially at this critical time. So if anything, we're going to be calling for more protection in more areas, but definitely more than 8%, and definitely to equal out this this disparity across the country so that everybody, no matter where you live, can walk out and not just feel like they're looking at wallpaper. If they're looking at a nice landscape, like a beautiful landscape they want to explore, they can actually walk through it. Yeah, so that's sort of how, that's what the Crow Act enabled. And we are essentially calling for the Scottish side of things because it's worked really well there. And so we're basically saying, well, why can't we have that? So yeah, that's essentially what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Wild camping on Dartmoor has become a real focal point for campaigning around the issue of access to the landscape. Could you explain a bit about the context behind why wild camping was allowed on Dartmoor and the legal fight that banned it before the right to wild camp was reinstated at appeal?
Yeah, sure. So so in certain national parks and above a certain height, it is legal to wild camp. However, in all other places in England, it is illegal to wild camp. It's punishable by a prison sentence. It can be up to 3 months, or you get a hefty fine of between £2,000 and £3,000. But this is sort of what we're kind of seeing with this particular case was that this landowner, so despite being in the national park where these activities were legal, this particular landowner, Alexander Darwall, wanted to ban it because he was making comments about litter and people sort of destroying his land. We know that it is not from wild camping that the main issues of public litter and of destruction of the landscape is not usually the wild campers. It could be fly camping, which is how sometimes happens, where people don't take care of the environment as such. But wild camping is an incredible way for people to reconnect with land and for them to learn about themselves, to connect with nature. There's countless nature youth organizations that go out there, like the Duke of Edinburgh. And essentially, this one landowner wanted to stop that from happening, which is why there was such an uproar about it. I guess because we didn't realize as a nation what was going to be lost until it was about to happen. I don't even think that there were many people who knew about the fact that you could do that in the first place in Dartmoor. So it was good for that it actually came to light and showed us that this is actually the last remaining place where it's legal. And so now what we're calling for as a result of that is that all other national parks follow suit and do allow wild camping because we've obviously been able to share how much public support there is for these kinds of experiences. And again, it's just going back to this nature connection, this sense of well-being, belonging, a sense of resilience that is just, you're unable to replicate that unless you actually live through that. So I think that's essentially why the campaign through this became so big, was because there were so many people whose lives had been transformed through that experience. And so, yeah, hence the legal uproar and then the fight for that to be reinstated.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In terms of changing the law on the right to roam, what have the major political parties said about it?
So it's been largely mixed and relatively predictable, actually. So we've got the Tory party who have denied they don't want this at all. They do not agree with a right to roam. We've then got the opposite in the Green Party. They've been really supportive and in favour. Bearing in mind, the Green Party is a party that promotes the development and the improvement of our landscapes, our own connection to it. It's a party that is for the earth. So they're in favour of this. So it really does show that it's not humans that, and the everyday person that is going to destroy the landscape. And in fact, if we've got more eyes on these places, then we can stop some of the activity that isn't so good for our environment that is happening behind closed doors. So we've got, the Green Party that are in favour. We've Caroline Lucas, I know she's left now, but she's a big supporter of the campaign. And then we have parties like Labour, who have shown their support. But since there's been a reshuffle, it's kind of a bit unclear recently how much of that they are going to stick to. And then we have the Lib Dems. So they've recently had a big campaign push towards our river health. And so have been on board in that sense, because the right to roam would apply to rivers. And, we're really keen on showing a positive trace. So like, it's a right to roam so that we can actually learn how to take care of our landscape all together. It shouldn't be just down to like the landowner. We believe that like, it should be everyone's responsibility to take care of the health of the landscape around them. So Lib Dems have been keen on that side of things, but it's not necessarily clear what their stance is on a right to roam act. But that being said, we are currently finalising a right to roam act. We've essentially gone from the Scottish Land Reform Act and adapted it for England. So we're essentially doing a lot of this behind the scenes work. We've got our lawyers on who are working and drafting a bill that could be passed legitimately. So with that, we're going to open it out to other organisations to get their opinions, to work out where are the gaps that we're missing, and also get some advice on some wildlife and people's interaction with those things as well, to make sure that we're like protecting those areas that need protection. So we're working behind the scenes to support each of the parties so that they can use what we're stating in their legislation should they wish to join us on board.
Do you think it's a case that perhaps with some of the political parties, that the right to roam is maybe something that hasn't been put to the forefront with them in the past, and that's perhaps why they've not been as committed to it? Or do you think that just because of the nature of right to roam and some of the changes that would mean to access and to obviously the impact that would have on some landowners, that's why some of the political parties are a bit perhaps cautious in regards to supporting right to roam?
Yeah, it's totally understandable, as in there's a lot of misunderstanding, or I guess like a lot of unknowns with potential right to roam, because it isn't something that we've until now had an actual legislation for. It's really unclear what the promises would be. So I feel like there's a lot of parties who aren't clear what exactly they would be agreeing to. So hence why we're doing a lot of work, a lot of conversations, and trying to share what this would actually mean. We're also in contact with the Farmers Union and the National Farmers Union. We are really working hard to make sure that, how can we make something in legislation that actually benefits farmers as well, that takes into account landowners and farmers and people who already have so many pressures on them to take care of that land. We want this to be something that alleviates some of those pressures for them. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of work going on in the background, like I say, with building these connections. And also, welcome to anyone listening, like, to get in touch with the campaign if they have anything to share and things that we might be missing. Because we really want to welcome this as a collective conversation, because, it's definitely a mix of those two things. So firstly, it hasn't been brought up in the past. We've sort of had the Crow Act, and maybe no one's really challenged that. And then, again, we sort of want to make sure that there's more clarity over what exactly would be involved in a Right to Roam Act, so that both legislators and, you know, as I say, farmers and landowners feel that they know exactly what it's going to mean. Because in our conversations so far, there's a lot of fear, and it's a lot of fear because of the unknown. And so we're really here to try and dispel that fear, to try and like have these conversations and make sure that this is better for people and planet and landowner. So yeah, just connect, make sure that everyone is connected. It's definitely not an either or thing. So so yeah, it's definitely something we're working towards. But in a nutshell, I agree, it's the unknown, and that is a bit scary, but we're trying to dispel that.
Yeah, no, of course. Finally, thank you for taking the time to speak to me, but finally, if someone wants to get involved with the Right to Roam, how can they get involved?
So there's a few different ways. I mean, the first would be to have a look in your area, even physically going out there, but just having a bit of doing a bit of research in terms of how much land is actually accessible near you. Maybe you want to create a group near you. So we have local groups dotted around the country, but it's also, you know, welcome everybody to just join with their community and learn about land justice in their area. Who does own the land in the area? How much right to roam do you have? As I mentioned, there are some constituencies in England where there literally is none. So first it would be to sort of like learn about your own right to roam where you are, and then join a local group, create a local group yourself, and essentially explore that land. As I mentioned, that, you know, trespass is not a criminal offence. It's a civil offence. So if you were to go onto somebody's land, with the exception of obviously, you know, private gardens and croplands and things, but if you wanted to explore a local woodland near you, and if you're asked to leave and you leave, then there is nothing that can be done. It's not a criminal offence in that sense. So I would say to definitely explore your local area, and then yeah, join a local group and start learning about land justice where you are.
Absolutely. Well, thank you once again for taking the time to speak to me, Maria. If people want to find out more about you and more about Right to Roam, where should they go to find out more?
So they can go on to righttoroam.org.uk. Or they can find us on social media channels as well. We're always up for conversation, so definitely people get in touch. We've also got a page on our website where it has a little bit more information about getting involved, what our local groups have been up to. We've also got lots of different resources there for you to explore and map out the area where you live too. So yeah, we're always up for conversation, so definitely welcome people to get in touch and connect, and we can connect you with other people who've got in touch near you as well. So yeah, we're looking to connect people up and help empower people to learn.
Well, hopefully there'll be a few people listening who will do just that. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast.
Great. Thanks, Will. Speak to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, @DebatedPodcast. Like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.